Welcome, everybody, and thank you for attending this Communicate with Power teleseminar. In the next hour, I'm going to give you about 10 pages of fine print and fine points on ideas that you can use to be dramatically more effective in communicating with other people in every part of your life. Now, let's start off with rule number one. Fully 85% of your success in all areas of your life will be determined by your ability to communicate effectively with others. This statistic of 85% of your success, happiness, health, prosperity, wealth, growth, sales, and the quality of your home and personal life comes from survey after survey after survey, because in the final analysis, everything we do or don't do, everything we accomplish or don't accomplish, involves other people. And the quality of our communications with those people determines the quality of their interactions and communications with us. So we say basically the quality of your communications determines the quality of your life. The good news is that communicating is a skill that you can learn with practice. Remember, nobody is born with the ability to communicate. Many people that I've worked with, by the way, have been shy, retiring, stumbling, poor communicators, even have come here from other countries, have had stutters and voice impediments, have forgotten, their minds have gone blank, and as a result of practice over and over again, they've become extremely fluent and competent. One of the greatest orators of all time was Demosthenes of ancient Greece, and he was so terrified of speaking, and he stuttered so badly that when he tried to speak initially, he was laughed at and laughed out of the forum in Athens. So he practiced by putting pebbles in his mouth and speaking to the ocean. And he would speak to the ocean and speak until he could speak clearly with pebbles in his mouth. And then he would take the pebbles out one at a time. And then he went back into the forum and he became one of the great speakers of all time. So is it a learnable skill? Yes. No matter how you've communicated in the past, it doesn't matter. So let's start off. We say that the most important reason why you would learn to be a good communicator is motivation. We say motivation requires a motive. In other words, you must have a reason for it. As Nietzsche said, a person can bear any what if they have a big enough why. If your reasons are big enough, you can overcome any obstacle. So what do you want to accomplish in your interactions with others? Here's what I consider to be the big five. Number one, you want people to like you and to respect you. You want when people see you, when they talk to you, you want them to pay attention to you, to consider you to be a person of value. You want people to reinforce your self-image. What we know, by the way, is going back from early childhood, is we learn who we are very much by the way people treat us. If people treat us in a positive and uplifting and attentive and respectful way, we feel more important, we feel stronger, we feel more confident ourselves. So number one, you want people to like and respect you. This is not only the key to success in life, but it's very much the key to success in business and sales. Number two is you want people to feel that you are valuable and important. Now this relates to your self-esteem. And as you know, in life, everything we do is either to gain self-esteem or to protect it from being taken away from us. So your level of self-esteem, how much you like and respect yourself, how much you consider yourself to be a valuable and important person is the critical statement about you. And the more effective you are in your communications, the better people treat you, the more confident you feel, the higher is your self-esteem, the more you like yourself, the more effective you are, the more energy you have, the more you sell, and the better family and relationships you have. Number three reason is you want to be able to persuade people to your point of view. You want to be able to sell your products or services or ideas. Now the fact is that in life is you can either be influential and persuasive and get people to go along with you, or you can become a passive object and they can get you to go along with them. It's really one or the other. And the most effective people are people who are capable of getting other people to cooperate with them. And I'll show you how to do that. Number four is you want to get people to change their minds and to cooperate with you in your ideas, in your projects. It is absolutely amazing. Bill Gates was able to build his fortune by convincing the executives of IBM that they should entrust him and his partner, an unknown little company in Seattle that did not even have a basic operating system, they should entrust them with the development of the operating system for the IBM PC. Bill Gates was able to persuade them of this, and as a result, he became the richest man in the world. Sometimes your ability to communicate, negotiate, persuade, and sell in a single situation can change your entire life. And number five, overall, you want to be more powerful and effective in all your relationships, personal and business. This is the key to leadership, to success, to high income, and to a great feeling of personal pride and power. So these are our goals for our time together today. Well, let's start. Now, some years ago, a man named Daniel Goleman, graduate of Harvard, works in Boston, wrote a book called Emotional Intelligence. And it kind of rocked the entire business world because what he said is that IQ, which is intelligence, which can be measured by the grades that you get, the courses you take, the colleges you attend, and so on, he said is not as important as EQ or emotional intelligence. Emotional quotient is your ability to interact and affect the lives, work, and thinking of other people. And so all of his work on emotional intelligence at work, emotional intelligence in the executive, and so on, has come to the conclusion that your ability to interact effectively with others is worth more than the best grades from the best universities. And of course, we've known this intuitively, which is why the discovery of it was so remarkable. Somebody had finally proven it scientifically. Well, Goleman was interviewed by Fortune magazine a couple of years ago, and they said, well, tell us exactly what is emotional intelligence. How do you define it? How do you qualify it? I mean, what does it consist of? Well, Goleman went around in circles through most of the article saying, well, it's the ability to get along with others. It's the ability to be sensitive to the needs of others, to empathize. But what he finally said, and this is what really stuck in my mind, was that it is the ability to persuade others, is that persuasion is the highest level and measure of emotional intelligence. In other words, your ability to persuade others, as opposed to being persuaded by them, is the true measure of the height to which you've developed your personality, and the ability to persuade others is very much a learnable skill. So, how do you get your ideas across, get people to cooperate with you? How do you develop your abilities to communicate, influence, and persuade others? Let's look at some key points. Number one is always remember that people do things for their reasons, not for yours. People are perfectly selfish, whether it's a healthy selfishness or an unhealthy selfishness. People think about themselves all the time. People think about their own needs, their own hungers, their appetites, their desires, what they want to do today, tomorrow, the next week, and so on. So when you want to persuade other people, what you have to do is you have to start off with them and what they want rather than starting off with you and what you want. So the next rule is this, is to get out of yourself and get into the mind and situation of another. As you know, I've trained more than 500,000 people in sales, and many of them have what is called call reluctance or fear of rejection. I say the easiest way to get over your uneasiness in communicating with other people is to forget about yourself and instead focus totally on the other person and what he or she wants, what he or she needs, what he or she is saying, because your mind can only hold one thought at a time. And if you are thinking solely in terms of the other person and what he or she wants or needs, you suddenly lose all your nervousness because you can't remember to be nervous or self-conscious. The reason people fear rejection is because they take the interaction personally. The way that you get over the fear of rejection is you realize it's not personal, that the other person is thinking about themselves most of the time. And if you get into harmony with them thinking about themselves, all your feelings of uneasiness disappear. Now, here's a great rule I learned many years ago, and it's this, is you can only persuade and influence others if they believe that you can do something for them or to them, or you can stop something from being done to them or for them. Now, that sounds a little bit harsh, but let's just be realistic. The fact is that if a person can do nothing to us or for us, has no possible impact in our lives, we're busy and we just keep on going. But if we feel that a person can help us in any way, a waiter can help us get a better table, a friend can help us get a better price, a salesperson can help us get a better product or service, a person that we're married to or going out with can help us or affect us in some way, only then do they have the ability to persuade us. So persuasion always comes from your ability to do something to or for someone or to prevent something from being done to or for them. Now, people are motivated by two major factors in life. We call these almost like two constellations. The first factor that motivates people is desire for gain. Is all human action is aimed at being better off in some way. Now, without going into the psychology, and I've gotten shelves of books on this. Basically, individuals act toward self-improvement. They want to be better off as a result of acting than they were before acting. They will only act if they believe that by taking an action, by doing something you want them to do, by being open to your persuasion, that they'll be better off. Now, there's four areas of gain primarily that people seek. They seek physical gain. Of course, we want things. We want money, cars, boats, homes, and so on. They seek material gain. They want to be better off in some material sense. We seek financial gain. We want to have more money if we possibly can. But especially and most important, people seek emotional gain. You see, as according to Maslow and all his work in motivation and psychology, once a need is satisfied, it's no longer a motivator. If you are selling hamburgers to a person who is really hungry, the person is highly motivated and will pay a lot. But if the person just had two hamburgers and you try to sell them a third hamburger, the amount they'll pay you for the hamburger is virtually nothing because they just don't need it. So in our society today, most of our basic needs are covered. We have places to live, we have clothes, we have cars, we have money in the bank, we have job security, high levels of employment. We're living actually in the most affluent society in all of human history. So the physical, material, financial motivations are not as strong, but the emotional motivation for status, prestige, love, warmth, attention, a feeling of importance, value, self-esteem, these things are really important to us. And if you can give those or take them away, you can have an enormous influence on other people. The second major constellation of needs is the fear of loss. Now, the fear of loss, is physical danger, being hurt in some way, dying early because of poor health habits or something wrong with us, which drives us to doctors, hospitals, and so on, or a material loss, losing something that belongs to us, financial loss, losing money of some kind, or emotional loss. And the most traumatic emotional loss a person can suffer is loss of approval, loss of security, loss of love and respect of other people, and so on. In fact, someone once said that everything we do in life is either to earn the respect of other people or not to lose their respect. In fact, people will often die not to lose the respect of other people. They will stand up for things and they will even sacrifice their lives. They say that people in the military don't fight for God and country and mom and apple pie. They fight and they stay there because of their buddies to the right and their buddies to the left of them. Is because their respect, the respect of the people they live and breathe and eat and work with, is more important to them than anything else, which is why they will even endanger their lives. So what point I'm making is this, is that if you can find out what a person desires to gain and show them that you can help them to gain it, you can influence and persuade them, you can communicate with power. If you can find out what a person fears to lose and show them that you can stop them from losing that, you can have influence and you can persuade them as well. Here's the interesting discovery, is that there is a different ratio between desire for gain and fear of loss, in that people are motivated 2.5 times more to avoid loss than they are for gain. In other words, if you offer a person a dollar if they do something, they have a certain amount of motivation. If you threaten to take away a dollar if they don't do it, their motivation is 2.5 times as high. So remember, fear of loss of money, material things, finances, or respect, esteem, value, support, and so on is a far more motivating influence than the desire for gain. The best rule, of course, is to use both. If you buy this from me or you accept my recommendation, you get this. However, if you don't, it'll be too late and you'll end up with that. So you present desire for gain and fear of loss. In life, and especially with communicating with power, everything is perception. Everything is not what it is, but it's how people perceive you as being able to help them or hurt them in some way. So let's talk about the best part, helping and benefiting others. What we know is that this is based on what is called the E factor. The E factor is something I've worked on for many years. It's called the expediency factor. The expediency factor basically says that all people are expedient. They're expedient in this sense, and here it is. People always strive to get the things they want the fastest and easiest way possible, with little immediate concern for the long-term consequences of their actions. Now let me repeat that, because this really is the explanation of all of human behavior, and it is the key to communicating with power and to being effective at influencing and persuading others. People always strive to get the things they want the fastest and easiest way possible, with little immediate concern for the long-term consequences of their actions. Now, of course, there's 1,000 exceptions to this, but this is the basic rule. So your job is to make your proposal, whatever you're suggesting to somebody else, to be apparently the most expedient for that person at that time. All marketing, all sales, all public and commercial persuasion is aimed at convincing people that if they have a need, that this product or service is the fastest and easiest way for them to fulfill that need at a reasonable price. And if you can convince people that your product or service is the best choice, all things considered, you can get them to take action on it now. Now, there are 4 keys to persuasion that you can develop and use. We call them the 4 P's. The first of the 4 P's is personal power. Now, personal power is something that you can create. It's something that you can earn. It's something that you can reach as a result of achievements. For example, a senior executive has personal power. When someone says, "This is the president of the organization," a salesperson or anyone else is immediately impressed, and that person has a far greater ability to persuade you than someone who may have just started with a company on the loading dock last week. A person who is wealthy has personal power. A person who is important has personal power. Now, here's the interesting thing. If you carry yourself as though you are an important person, if you speak to people as though you are a person of respect, they almost immediately perceive you to have more influence and power than you might have otherwise. So personal power is very important. The second P is positioning. And positioning is how people think and talk about you when you're not there. It has to do with your reputation. What is your reputation amongst the people who know you? What is your reputation in the marketplace? If people were to describe you to others when you weren't there, what words would they use? Even better, what words would it be useful for them to use? You see, really successful people think all the time about the impression that they're making on others and how others are likely to think about them when they're not there. So they make sure that everything they do and say is consistent with how they want people to think and feel about them when they leave. The third P to persuasion is performance. A person who has a reputation for high levels of competence and expertise, when you do your job really well, when you're recognized as one of the best people in your field, you have far greater persuasive power over others than if you're not, or than if other people don't know. For example, I was speaking to a fellow the other day. We had this great conversation. We're talking away and very casual. And he said, "Oh, by the way, he won a gold medal in the Olympics in gymnastics a few years ago." Well, the instant he said that, my whole attitude toward him changed. My whole attitude toward the things that he said changed. Suddenly, here was a person, even though we're talking about business, here was a person who had achieved greatly in a very competitive field who suddenly went way, way up in my perception because of his ability to perform. That's why you'll find that a person in sales, for example, who becomes the top salesman of the year and has it on their card, number one for the year, when they meet with clients, clients are unduly impressed with them and much more likely to buy from the person who's the top salesperson than they would have been before they knew that. So everything that you do to get better in your field changes your perception in the minds and hearts of the people around you and makes it easier for you to persuade them. In many companies, the person who is the recognized expert in a key function is the person everybody listens to when they talk. Now, the fourth P is politeness. And this comes back to the emotional issue. Is politeness means that you use kindness, courtesy, and respect when you deal with other people. When you're traveling around your life, you'll meet people on a random basis, taxi drivers, people in hotels, checking onto airlines, getting tables at restaurants, and so on. So you can't establish long-term relationships, but one of the fastest ways for you to develop persuasive communicating power is just to be polite with them. Because what do we know? We know that powerful people are polite in most cases. We know that the people who are the top in their field are polite, people who are confident in their own ability because they have high levels of performance and success behind them tend to be very polite and gracious. In my lifetime, I've met several millionaires, multimillionaires, 100 millionaires, and even several billionaires. The interesting thing about billionaires, I remember the last one I met him at a social function. I knew who he was before I met him because I recognized the name. I read it in the Forbes 400. He's one of the richest men in the world. When I met him, he was one of the nicest, most gracious people at the function. If you did not know that he was really, really wealthy, worth several billion dollars, if you hadn't known that in advance, there's no way you could have told it from meeting him, because he was just as normal and as natural and as gentle and as friendly a person as they could be. I was once asked by a friend of mine who was going to go traveling in the Far East, where I'd lived for several years. He said, "Can you give me any secrets to getting along well in my travels? Any special tips, cultural tips, and so on?" I said, "I'll give you just one." I said, "Always be polite with everybody you meet. Learn the words please and thank you in each country and use them over and over again." I said, "You'll never have a problem." And he wrote to me after a two-month trip through for the Far East. He said it was the best advice he ever had in his life. Just please and thank you. Now, what is the deepest need that people have that you can satisfy without money, without anything else? Well, according to Dale Carnegie and all the psychologists, the deepest need that people have is to feel important and valuable. Dale Carnegie once said, "If you tell me what gives a person their greatest feeling of importance, I'll tell you their entire philosophy of life." People need to feel important. And now Robert Cialdini, who I spoke to recently, had wrote a book some years ago called Influence. And in that, he looked at the factors that cause people to be influenced and persuaded by others. And his conclusion was that one of the most powerful of all was called liking. And in sales, this is so important. In negotiating, it's so important. In getting a good table in a restaurant, it's so important. With all your friends and family, is liking. Is the more people like you, the more readily they are to help you, to do things for you, to do things with you, to cooperate with you, and so on. They'll give you better prices. They'll give you better rooms. They'll give you better tables in the restaurant, and they'll buy more of your product from you. In fact, what we know, if you want to get straight down to selling, is that a person will only buy from you when they are convinced that you are their friend and that you care about them as a person more than just a check. So the more people like you, the more they'll buy from you. And the flip side is also the truth. If they don't like you, they won't buy from you, even though your product or service is superior. So we say the key to getting people to like you is to make people feel important. Make people feel important. Remember the famous line from Mary Kay Ash, the founder of Mary Kay Ash Cosmetics? She said, "Imagine that every person you meet has a sign around their neck that says, 'Make me feel important,' and just respond to that sign, and you'll never go wrong." And that was her basic philosophy, and that should be your basic philosophy as well. But what we know is that there's five ways that you can make people feel important, and they're all very simple and easy to do. They don't cost any money. They only take a couple of seconds and a little bit of thought on your part. These five ways are what I call the five A's. They all start with A. And the first A is acceptance. Acceptance means that you respond to and you satisfy one of the deepest of all subconscious needs of other people, is the need for unconditional acceptance. One of the things we know is that our spouses need to be unconditionally accepted and loved by us. Our children need unconditional love from us. In every case, unconditional acceptance, unconditional love, is one of the most powerful ways to make people feel valuable and important. And how do you express acceptance to other people? You simply smile. They say that it takes 13 muscles to smile and 111 muscles to frown. And if you smile at other people, if you're friendly and accepting and just pleasant with other people, it causes them to feel valuable and important. It reinforces their self-image. It can sometimes take a person who's in a bad mood and change their mood instantaneously. So therefore, just smile. You know the old saying, if you meet someone who doesn't have a smile, lend them one of yours. The second A to make people feel important, to raise their self-esteem, to cause them to want to be influenced and persuaded by you, is appreciation. And this works in every country, in every nationality. And appreciation means that you thank people for the things that they do, and you thank them for big things and little things. You use the words thank you over and over again. You start off in the morning, and when your kids get good grades, you say thank you. And when somebody brings you a cup of coffee, you say thank you. And when dinner is ready and it's good, you say thank you. And the more you thank people for things, the more they will repeat the things that you thank them for. When we're trying to train a dog or a horse, what you do is you give them a sweet or a candy or a sugar lump right after they do something good. In other words, you say thank you in a way that they understand. The most amazing thing is that if you go into a restaurant, for example, and this is what I always do. First time I sit down, person comes to the table, I say, are you going to be our waiter? Person says, yes. I say, what is your name? They say, it's Rob or Susan. I say, thank you, Rob. I'm really looking forward to the evening. Or thank you, Rob. I really appreciate it. And you just use their name and say thank you. For the rest of the evening, you get the best service that it's possible to get in that restaurant. It's the most amazing thing. Ask them for their name, thank them for giving their name, and every time they come to the table, use their name and say thank you. Tell the people in your office thank you for the little things they do. Because here's what we know. Every time you smile, your brain releases endorphins, and it makes you feel happier and more positive yourself. Every time you say thank you, it not only raises the self-esteem of the other person, but it raises your own self-esteem at the same time. You actually feel happier by making somebody else feel better about themselves. Now, the third A is admiration. And admiration is very simple. Remember, Abraham Lincoln once said, everybody likes a compliment. With admiration, you admire traits, accomplishments, or possessions. For example, you can admire a trait. You know, you're certainly punctual, or you are really persistent. Or you're always cheerful. Whenever you admire a particular trait or quality of a person, which is very personal to them, their self-esteem goes up, they feel happy, they like you. Whenever I deal with a businessman, I say, this is quite a business you have here. And they said, yes, it's taken us 12 years to get here. I said, you must be very proud of what you've accomplished. It's quite remarkable. And whenever you say that, you must be very proud of what you've accomplished here. They immediately smile and beam, because people are proud of things that they work long and hard to accomplish. You can praise their accomplishments. They got an award. They graduated from a university. They won a golfing trophy. Or you can appreciate their possessions. Admire their car. Admire their dress or their briefcase. Admire their purse or their shoes. Admire their home or their office building. Whenever you express admiration of a trait, an accomplishment, or a possession, people feel happy inside, and they look at you differently, and somehow they want to be around you, they want to do business with you, they become open to being persuaded by you to do something that maybe you want to have done. The fourth A is approval, and this is one of the most powerful of all. They say that men die for it and children cry for it. Approval means praise, and one of the definitions of self-esteem is the degree to which you feel praiseworthy or worthy of praise. When somebody praises you and said, boy, that's a good job, that's great, or that looks really good, or thank you, or that looks terrific, whenever you are praised for something that you've done, your self-esteem goes up, your energy levels go up, you feel happier, your brain releases endorphins, you actually increase your levels of energy when you are praised. So when you praise other people for small and large things, you have a wonderfully powerful effect on them. So here's the rules with regard to praise. Number one, be specific. Don't say, you're a great kid. Say, you really did well in your English class on your report card this semester. You really brought it up. In other words, be as specific as you can about your praise. And second of all, be immediate. In other words, if somebody does something that's good, praise them immediately. Phone them immediately. Go and see them immediately. Because praise that is both specific and immediately after the event has the greatest psychological and emotional impact on a person. The flip side is you say, boy, you're a great kid, and you say that once a year, and it's nonspecific and it's divorced from any event, it doesn't have any effect. So do those, and what happens each time you praise a person and their self-esteem goes up, they like you more, they want to cooperate with you, they're open to being persuaded by you, they enable you to communicate with greater power. And the fourth A is attention. Attention is the most powerful of all. You see, the way and time that we feel really valuable and worthwhile is when people pay attention to us. The flip side of paying attention to somebody is ignoring them. And there is nothing that so causes a person to feel unhappy about themselves than to be ignored by other people. It's one of the most soul-destroying things you can do to others is just not listen to them, not pay attention to them. But on the flip side, when you pay close attention to people, when they do something, when they say something, when they accomplish something, when they're performing at something, it's like parents going and watching kids play. Kids don't pay any attention to their parents as long as they know their parents are there. And kids will always perform better when they know that their parents are there. Do you know that almost every great world record has been broken in front of a huge crowd? Is that there's something about a crowd watching an athlete that causes them to perform at their very best? So by attention, we mean listening to people when they talk. Now, this is a tremendous discipline because we have so many things going on in our mind. Sometimes it's very hard to listen to other people. But you can listen to other people when they talk by practice. And listening is the key to leadership. Is leaders are good listeners. It's the key to persuasion. The more you listen to people, the more they open up to being persuaded by you. It's the key to communications because the more you listen, the better you understand people and the more they know that you understand them. And when you listen, you tell people that you really care about them and what they're saying. So there's four keys to listening. Listening is so powerful that it's often called white magic because it has a magical influence on other people. By the way, if you're single and you meet another person of the opposite sex, instead of trying to impress them, the rule is to be impressed by them. It's very simple. Ask them questions about what they do and then listen attentively to what they're saying. Listen closely as though it's the most fascinating thing you ever imagined. Like you accidentally found yourself talking to a Nobel Prize winner and Olympic athlete simultaneously. So here are the four keys to being a great listener. Number one, listen attentively. Lean forward and don't interrupt. This is the hardest thing of all, especially for men. I hate to say it, but men are more likely to interrupt women than women are to interrupt men. Women are really good listeners. They're very, very sensitive to the emotions of other people. When you listen attentively to another person, it raises their self-esteem, makes them feel important and valuable, and causes them to like you and trust you and want to cooperate with you more than anything you could imagine. You can take a person who is neutral to negative when you meet them in business, and just by asking them honest questions and listening closely to the answers, you can soften them out, neutralize their negative emotions, and make them pay close attention to you and like you and want to be involved with you. Number two is pause before replying. Pausing is a very elegant part of listening. Allowing silence in the conversation is a very powerful part of communicating with other people. So when you pause, you achieve three goals. First of all, if the person is just reorganizing their thoughts, you avoid the danger of interrupting. Whenever you interrupt a person, it's like slapping them in the verbal face. So you pause. Leave a silence in the conversation. Wait for a few seconds before you jump in with your own comment. The second advantage of pausing is it allows you to hear at a deeper level. Often when people say something, it skitters off the top of your mind like a stone across a flat surface of water. But if you just let the words soak into your mind, you actually hear the person at a deeper level and truly understand what they're saying. And the third benefit of pausing is it enables you to tell the person in no uncertain terms that you consider what they said was very valuable. And it was so valuable that you're turning it over in your mind before you respond to it. Now, the third key to listening is question for clarification. Never assume that you fully understand what a person means when they say something. Remember, most people say things that are only half the story, or they use the wrong words, or they use words in the wrong order. So if there's any ambiguity at all, always ask the question, how do you mean? How do you mean exactly? Well, I'm thinking of doing this. How do you mean? We can't afford to do that. Well, how do you mean? We're not in the market right now. Well, how do you mean exactly? The question, how do you mean, is one of the most powerful questions in all of communicating. And you can use it as an all-purpose question in any situation. Now, here's an important rule. The person who asks questions has control. The person who asks questions has control. The person who is answering the questions is controlled by the person who asks questions. So really, really great communicators are people who ask really good questions and then face forward, lean in, and hang on every word. We say, imagine that your eyes are sun lamps and you want to give the other person's face a tan. Lean forward. Run your eyes up and down their face. Look at their lips, look at their eyes, back and forth, as though you want to give the person's face an even tan all over. It's the most powerful form of listening you can imagine. And when a person finishes speaking, pause and say, how do you mean exactly? And every time you ask that question, they will expand on their previous comment. Now, here's another listening technique that's very powerful. If you ask a person about something that they did or accomplished, how did you achieve this? How did you achieve that? What have you accomplished recently? And so on, and they explain it to you, you can then follow up with the question, and then what did you do? And then what did you do? It's the most amazing question, because whenever a person slows down, they're slowing down to see if you're still interested. You say, really? And then what did you do? Your wife or your husband comes home and he says, I did this and I did that and I did this and I did that. And they stop. You say, wow. And then what did you do? Or what did you say? And then what did you say? It's the most amazing way to keep a conversation going. And the more questions you can ask that cause the person to answer, the more they trust you, the more they like themselves, the happier they are, the more open they are to your influence and to your persuasion. And another great question you can ask when somebody tells you about something that happened to them is, wow, how did you feel about that? How did you feel about that? Whenever you ask a person a feeling question, you connect with their deepest emotions. You connect with their subconscious mind. Really, how did that make you feel? Or how did you feel about that? Those three questions, how do you mean? And then what did you do? And how did you feel about that? Are powerful questions that keep a person talking, keep you in control of the conversation, and make you more powerful and more persuasive. And finally, the fourth key to listening is to feed it back and paraphrase it in your own words. Say something like, well, let me see if I understand what you're saying, or you mean that what you did was this, and you paraphrase it and you feed it back, which is called the acid test of listening. This is the proof that you were really paying attention. You weren't like one of those little dogs in the back of a car with the head bobbing up and down. You were really paying attention because you can feed it back accurately. And the person says, yes, that's exactly what happened. What you've done is you've complimented them in a way that is quite amazing, that opens them up to you. And now when you want to talk, they want to listen. Because one of the greatest and most powerful of all influence techniques is what is called reciprocity. When you ask a person good questions and you listen closely to the answers, they want to reciprocate by asking you questions and listening closely to your answers and somehow being involved with you in some way. Well, Aristotle, the great philosopher who wrote the Rules of Rhetoric over 2,350 years ago, said there are three parts of any communication. And in rhetoric, what he meant is discussion or speech. He said the first part is ethos. Ethos is the character of the person. So the very first thing that people are presented with is the ethos, the character of the person. When you have a good reputation, when you look good, when you're on time, when you're friendly, persuasive, prepared, when you're confident and open and cheerful, the persuasive power of your personality opens the person's mind to listen. The second part of any communication is called the pathos. And the pathos is the emotions of the person you're talking to. Sometimes I ask my audiences, what percentage of people are emotional and what percentage are logical? And they'll say 80-20, 90-10, 50-50. The answer is that people are 100% emotional, that people decide emotionally and then justify logically. And the most powerful of all messages and the most powerful of all people are those who connect with the emotions, which means the needs of the other person at a deep level before they worry about the facts, the details, and the prices. And one of the most powerful ways to connect with the emotions of another person is to ask questions and listen. So pathos, the emotions that you're addressing. The emotions, of course, are desire for gain and fear of loss. They're the emotions that you can help a person to achieve something they want faster and easier than they ever could in the absence of your help. The third part is logos. And the logos is the logic or the words that you use to convince or to persuade a person. The logos is just the words, and the words are the least important of the three. Now, in a UCLA study that was done a couple of years ago, they were looking at communication, and Albert Mehrabian of UCLA came up with some statistics which you've probably heard before. They found that in a communication between two people face-to-face, that body language is fully 55% of the message. But your body language, the way your body is sitting, the way you're facing the person, whether you're open-handed, leaning forward, eyes open, watching the person's face, or sitting leaning back with your arms folded, looking away, that your body language conveys 55% of the message. Your tone of voice conveys another 38% of the message. Your tone of voice is inordinately powerful because people are processing the tone of voice and even the intonation on each word. The words themselves that you say are only 7%. In fact, they say in professional speaking is they will forget what you said by the time they get back to the car, but they will not forget how you said it. Sometimes when men and women argue, he'll say, "But I just said this," and she'll say, "Yes, but it was your tone of voice." You see, men don't think in terms of the tone of voice, they think about the words. Women think about the tone of voice more than anything else, which we'll touch upon in a moment. Here's an example. Imagine you take the sentence, "I love you very much." Imagine the different ways that you could deliver those words. You could say, "I love you very much." That's one message. You could say, "I love you very much," or "I love you very much," or "I love you very much," or "I love you very much." In other words, you can change the whole meaning of the sentence just by where you put the intonation or the emphasis on the words. If you change the body language and you turn around, fold your arms, put your feet up, and are watching the television when you say it, you can also have a dramatic impact on the message. Well, there are four personality styles that you will have to deal with throughout your life. The biggest mistake that most people make is because each of us is a personality style, they deal with everyone else the same way they are rather than the way the other person is. Now, you can divide personalities on two grids into four different types. The first are the introverted or self-contained personality. Person doesn't talk a lot, listens better, very attentive to others, or the extrovert, the expressive, the outgoing personality. That's one spectrum. If you take the other spectrum, there's the people-oriented or relationship-oriented person versus the task-oriented. Get the job done, practical, pragmatic, just the facts, ma'am. Now, if you divide personalities into four quadrants based on these two, you get four types of people. You get the relator, the analyzer, the director, and the socializer. The relator is the person who is an introvert and people-oriented. This person tends to be more sensitive, a little bit slower in decision-making, very emotional, introverted, people-oriented, cautious, and their primary motivation in life is let's get along, let's be friends, let's everybody be happy, let's not do or say anything that will cause other people to be unhappy. Today in our society, you hear a lot about political correctness and how you're not supposed to do or say anything that might offend anybody anywhere under any circumstances. Well, people who believe very strongly in that are relators, and this is the way they see the world. When you're dealing with a relator, you have to go a little bit slower. You have to deal with the fact that she or he cannot make a decision without making sure everybody approves of it, and they take a little bit more time. They need a lot of evidence that other people will be happy with this decision, that other people will like it, that this is perfect for the members of your family, your work, the other people in your company. When you're dealing with an analyzer is also an introvert, not a great speaker, self-contained, but is very task-oriented. This is a kind of person who becomes an accountant, an engineer, a computer programmer, and their biggest motivation in life is, let's be accurate. In other words, they like details, they're careful, they want to double-check everything, they're very uneasy with generalities, they like specific numbers. These people become accountants and engineers, and when you deal with these people, no matter what kind of a personality you are, you must be very clear and specific. They like decimal points. They like exact percentages, not like this will really boost your sales, is that we have evidence that after 6 months, your sales will increase an average of 12.4% if you use our system. In other words, they like specifics. That's what makes them happy and makes it easier for you to persuade them. The third type of personality is called the director personality. This is a person who's an extrovert and who is task-oriented. This is the entrepreneur, the fire chief, the head of a SWAT team. This is the vice president of production and manufacturing. This is a person who's impatient. He's in a hurry, quick decision maker. He wants you to cut to the chase, get to the bottom line, give him the facts, and if he likes it, he'll say yes or no, and they'll get going. When you deal with a person like this, you've got to pick up the pace. You have to address their concerns quickly. You have to solve their problems, and you have to get to the solution and get out as fast as you can. These people have no time to waste. You find that these people will be in fields that demand that kind of a personality. The fourth type of personality is called the socializer or the expressive personality. This is a person who is outgoing and people-oriented. This kind of a person gets into management, is often a successful executive. Sometimes they're in show business. Their favorite form of motivation is, look at me, look at you. They like to talk. They like to exchange information. They like to go back and forth. They're wonderful socializers. They have great senses of humor. The problem with these people is that they're hard to pin down. They're in favor of everything. They, let's go, let's do it, let's get on with it. And then they forget the details. Later on, when you remind them of the conversation, that's not what they remember. So with a socializer, you have to pick up the pace, be warmer, friendlier, more genial, more outgoing. And then once you have an agreement, immediately get it committed to paper. Repeat it and reaffirm it and get it committed to paper and sign, or this person will forget it sooner than you can imagine. The key to getting along with the four personalities, the relator, who's people-oriented and introverted, the analyzer, who's task-oriented and introverted, the director, who is task-oriented and extroverted, who's concerned about results, let's get results, and the socializer, is for you to use what is called personality flexibility. Ask questions attentively, listen carefully, and determine what kind of a personality you're dealing with, and then change your own mental and emotional gears so you're dealing with that person the way they like to be dealt with. If they go a little slower, you go a little slower. If they pick up the pace, you pick up the pace. If they demand specific answers, give specific facts and figures. You'll find that when you're dealing with any one of these people, their environment and their surroundings will often give them away. Well, the most important word in persuasion, influence, and communicating with power is the word credibility. Remember we said before that people can only be influenced by you if they believe that you can help them or hurt them in some way. Well, they have to believe it. They have to believe that you have the ability to help them or hurt them in some way. So the critical question is this, is how much does the person like you, trust you, and believe in what you say? And with regard to credibility, the most important word in sales, the most important word in life with other people, the rule is that everything counts. Everything counts. Everything helps or hurts. Everything adds up or takes away. Human beings are processing every single thing about you, every word, every bit about your clothing, appearance, everything about the things you do and say. They're processing it quickly because nobody wants to be burnt. Everybody's been burnt or cheated or treated badly in the past by someone. So people are terrified of loss, 2.5 times the power of their desire for gain. So they're watching every single thing that you do or don't do to determine whether or not they can believe you and trust in you. One of the hardest things I ever learned in sales was when somebody explained to me that if a qualified prospect does not buy from you after you've made a presentation, what they're saying is, I really don't trust you enough to buy from you. I really don't trust what you say. I really just don't believe that I'm going to get what you say I'm going to get at the price you're offering. And that's a real blow to think that you, as an honest person, is losing sales because people just don't trust you. Well, remember, everything counts. So, to develop trust with other people, rule number one is to be trustworthy, to be worthy of trust. How do you become worthy of trust? You keep your promises. You do what you say you will do. You are punctual. When you say you'll come to a meeting at 10 o'clock, you're there in advance. You're fully prepared. You do your homework. You bring what you said you'd bring. If you promise to do something for the prospect or to send him or her something, then you do it and you follow through with it quickly. Someone once said that the greatest ability in business is dependability. And dependability is the foundation of trust. We found in customer surveys that a customer would much rather deal with a company they can depend upon that charges more for a lesser quality product than deal with a company that is sporadic that sells a better product at a lower price. So dependability and consistency over time is a key part of effective communication. You need to develop a reputation for honesty and dependability. In everything you do, remember the customer is weighing and measuring and keeping score, and everything counts. So one of the things that you can do to communicate more effectively with others is to look the part. Remember, people are 95% visual in their first meeting with you. 95% visual. So the first impression that you make takes only 4 seconds. Lots of research says that a person looks at you and within 4 seconds they've made their first impression. Like their mind is fast drying cement and the first mark has been written on the cement. they conclude their impressions and close the book on you in 30 seconds. If you make a wrong impression in the first 4 seconds, you have 26 more seconds to correct it. Then people's minds are really funny. Then they'll look for every proof possible to justify the first impression. If the first impression is positive, they'll look for all kinds of reasons why they should have formed a positive impression. If the first impression is negative, they'll start to look at you for reasons why they should have formed a negative impression. So as they say, it's you never get a second chance to make a good first impression. So look the part, look good, dress for success, get a book and read it. Look at the most successful people in your environment. Look at the people that you admire. Look at the highest paid people in your field and make a decision to dress like them. When I was a young man, a friend of mine took me aside, and I was working very hard and losing a lot of sales. And he said, you know, you're never going to be successful the way you dress. Well, I came from a poor family. To me, wearing a suit, and it was a cheap suit made by a Pakistani tailor in Karachi, wearing a cheap suit to me was really something. I had no idea. And he took me to a Hong Kong tailor, and he had a Hong Kong tailor make a suit for me. And when I came out, I couldn't believe the difference in the person. And when I went back to the office, I couldn't believe the difference in the way people treated me. And from then on, I realized that that visual impact that you make on people is absolutely extraordinary. You can make or break your credibility and your ability to communicate and persuade in one single choice of dress. So, a way to increase your ability to communicate and persuade, now you've dressed for success, is preparation. Before every meeting of any importance, prepare. Do your homework. People know immediately when you're well prepared. People know immediately when you're not well prepared. The most embarrassing thing I've seen is when people come in to sell things to me or to anybody else and they haven't done any homework. So the first thing that you have to do is before you go and see somebody, think through what it is that they want. Think through where they're coming from. Think through what their desires for gain are. Think through what their fears of losses are. Remember, it's not about you. It's only about you if what you're doing is solely for yourself. But if someone else is involved, it's about them as well. Now, there are three business tools that Peter Drucker says that you must master in the world of communications. The first business tool is the one-on-one conversation. And that's sometimes the most important of all. Is there are many people who are successful in other areas of their life, but they're terrible one-on-one. And as a result, they really never go anywhere. I've even met successful public speakers who, when you meet them one-on-one, they're absolutely dreadful. They don't make eye contact. They have weak handshakes. They look away. They're nervous. They're uncomfortable. And surprise, surprise, they have no friends for the long term. So the first is the one-on-one conversation. And the very best way to be excellent at conversation is to prepare thoroughly, ask good questions, listen attentively to the answers, feed it back in your own words, question for clarification, and remember, the person who asks questions has control. The second business tool that you must master is the presentation before a group. Is your ability to speak at a meeting and to make presentations in front of small and large people is a critical business tool. I had a client in my seminar some years ago, and I told him this, and he got very angry with me. He said, well, I'm terrified, petrified of speaking in front of groups, and you're telling me that I can't move ahead in my large company unless I can do it. I said, I'm just telling you the results of the research. Well, 6 months later, he came back to another course that I was giving, and he was a totally different person. He said he went home that night, and he was really angry, and he talked to his wife, and she said, you know, there may be something to it. And so he began doing some research, and he joined a Dale Carnegie course. He joined Toastmasters. He took a public speaking course. He began to learn how to speak on his feet. Within 2 months, he was starting to do small presentations for his company. Within 4 months, he was their number one person. Within 6 months, he'd been promoted twice and increased his salary 40%. He said, you know, just deciding to learn how to make presentations changed the whole direction of my life. He said, the whole course of my life is different. He said, I'll have a better home and family for my children. I'll have a higher income. I'm more employable. I create greater value for my company. He said, I had no idea how powerful it was. And the wonderful thing about learning how to speak on your feet is that anybody can do it, because everybody who's doing it now at one time couldn't do it. And you can learn it just like a skill. If you can ride a bicycle or drive a car, both of the things you were clumsy at when you started off, you can learn to be a competent professional speaker. The third business tool that you must master is the written letter or report. Your ability to express yourself clearly on paper is terribly important. And wonderfully enough, there are great courses given by people who specialize in business writing. There are wonderful books. There are even books of letters that you can get and practice with. You can get a dictionary and look up words that you don't know. You can become extraordinarily articulate, both as a person and on paper, just simply by working on it. Now people say, well, that might may take me 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years. Yes, but here's the rule. The time is going to pass anyway. 3 or 4 or 5 years from now, how much older will you be? Well, you'll be 3 or 4 or 5 years older. The only question is, will you be competent, capable, fluent, able to communicate effectively with others and on paper? Of course you can. I was just reading a book written recently by an immigrant who came here unable to speak English, and he writes today in such beautiful English that his books have become bestsellers. And he writes them all himself. You can see the expression of him through the words. And I have several friends who come to the United States as immigrants who have become very successful authors and writing in absolutely beautiful English just as a matter of study and practice, and so can you. Remember, all business skills are learnable through practice. Now, by the way, if you want to give an effective presentation, the way to give an effective presentation is fairly simple. I give this advice to my friends in professional speaking. Number one, prepare thoroughly in advance. Effective speaking is 90% preparation. If you've done all your preparation, the talk will sort of fall together by itself. Number two, when you do begin your talk, express your point of view. Don't beat around the bush. Say, I think we have something that could be very useful to you. Or I have a great idea that I think you're really going to like. In other words, state your idea or your point of view clearly right up at the beginning. Then, once you've done that, give reasons for your point of view. And this is why. This is why this is good for you. This is why you'll like this. This is why you should be interested in it. This is why you might want to do this. Give reasons for your point of view, because reasons build trust and credibility. And then, if possible, give evidence. You know, 12 other people tried this and they got this result. Is that this was written up in 3 newspapers as having a 3 or 3.5 star rating. In other words, evidence and reasons are very powerful. They build your credibility. They build trust in what you say, which means that they build trust in you. And then finally, restate your point of view. Say, so I really think that you should go ahead with this, or I really think this is a good idea for you. I really think this is something you should do. So state, prepare in advance, give your point of view, give reasons for your point of view, give evidence for your reasons, and then restate your point of view, and then just ask for action. So why don't we do it? Remember that the fear of asking for action is almost always the greatest problem in effective communications. Well, to outline a speech, remember there's a very simple way to outline a speech. It's 3 parts. Tell them what you're going to tell them what's in the speech, and then tell them what you told them. 1, 2, 3. Tell them what you're going to tell them. This is what I'm going to talk about. Here is the subject. Break it down into 3 points, and then tell them, and what I've just said is this, and summarize. You can summarize a sales speech, a talk to your boss, a proposition for an increase, a talk to a social group, a presentation to people in your office, and so on. Well, we've got a whole lot of other things to talk about, but I'm not going to be able to cover them all, so I just want to cover a couple of critical things. To influence people in business, remember the expediency principle. The expediency principle says that people do what they do because they feel it's the fastest and easiest way to get the things they want right now without too much concern for long-term consequences. Remember that liking is a key factor. It's number one. The more a person likes you, the more likely it is that they will be influenced by you. Number two, credibility and trust are the number one reason for being persuaded, especially to buy something. One of the most powerful ways to build credibility is called social proof or testimonials. In other words, it's other people who've done the same thing. One of the most powerful ways to sell is to use social proof and show how many other people already agree with this, already using it, already like it. Use lists, use letters, use names, use testimonials, use photographs. Anything that can prove that other people have done it dramatically increases your credibility. Number three is building desire. To build the desire for people to cooperate with you, always focus on the benefits for the other person. Remember, it's not about you, it's about the other person. Focus on answering the question, what's in it for me? Focus on explaining how you will be better off if you do this, why this is a good decision for you. By the way, there's 2 ways that you can build buying desire, especially if you're selling a product. One is called the scarcity principle. And the scarcity principle is you suggest that this is the right thing for you, but there's only 1 left or 2 left, or there's only 1 left at this price. So if you can imply that a desirable good or service is scarce, you can increase the desire to buy it. A second is the contrast principle. If a person says, boy, that costs a lot of money, what you do is you contrast that with something that's much more expensive. You say, yes, it does cost a lot, but this costs vastly more. In fact, if we buy this, the one you're recommending, it's actually a substantial saving over buying something else. Sometimes people, if they have one price in isolation, say, no, I can't do it. But if you show them that there's an alternative that's much more expensive, suddenly it becomes far more appealing. Now, the last thing I wanted to cover is I wanted to cover the differences between men and women in communicating. Now, this is a subject we could spend all day on, but remember, when you're dealing with men and women have such different brains that psychologists are concluding that if it were not for the similarities of their bodies, two arms, two legs, fingers, toes, hands, heads, and so on, they could almost be totally different creatures. Women, for example, use 7 parts of their brain when they communicate. Men use only 2. Women communicate multidimensionally. Men are extremely focused. So here are some of the differences between men and women in communicating. Number one is men are direct and women are indirect. Men say things exactly as they pop out of their mouths. Women give some thought to presenting things in the most effective way. Number two, men want a recommendation. Women prefer to choose from a selection. If you're selling to a man, say, here's what's available and this is what I recommend for you. If you're selling to a woman, you say, here's what's available, which one do you like the best? Number three, men use words as tools. They're very functional, like a screwdriver or a hammer. Women use words to connect, to nurture, and to build relationships. So when a woman asks the man a question about how things are going, she doesn't want to know, fine, things were great. She wants to communicate, to use words as bonding tools. She wants a more expanded answer. Number four, men like to make quick, practical decisions. Women prefer to listen to their emotions and go slower. Men always have trouble when they try to rush a woman into making a decision because women like to consider all aspects of a decision, especially all the different things that could happen, the people that might be involved, the emotions and the relationships that might be affected, and the alternatives. Now, another thing is men are motivated by success, status, power, results, and achievement. This is how men get their self-esteem. Women, however, are more concerned with family, children, friends, and relationships. Men, when you put them together, like to talk about sports, business, and politics. Women prefer to talk about people, relationships, and emotions. Men can only focus on one thing at a time, one sense at a time. If you're traveling with a man and he has to look at the map, he has to turn down the radio or the music to look at a map. If the phone rings, the man has to turn down the television to speak on the phone. Men can only process one sense at a time. They can't listen and hear. Women, however, can both talk and listen. Women can interact with other people and do other things simultaneously. It's very hard for men to do more than one thing at a time. That's why when a woman wants to talk to a man, she has to get straight in front of him. Because if the television is on, he can't watch the television and listen to her simultaneously. One of the things I've learned to do, by the way, is if my wife or my children want to talk to me, I turn off the television if I'm watching it. Or if I'm reading something, I put it down, I close it up. Because men can only focus on one thing at a time. So to get along better with women, men need to ask more questions, listen more attentively and more actively, and offer fewer suggestions or solutions. In most cases, women don't want suggestions or solutions. They just want to converse, to talk, to build relationships. For women to get along better with men, women need to be more direct, they need to be clear about what they want, and they need to ask for help or involvement. Here's the challenge for women, is men cannot read minds, but women can. Men can't read signals, but women can. So women send out signals that they need help with the garbage or with the children or with the cooking. Men are completely oblivious to the signals. Men have to have it hammered in the center of their head. Women have to get in front of them and say, would you please do this? And you know what? We'll do it immediately. We just need to have it clear. Men don't think a lot or deeply about relationships and communications. Women think about them all the time. And finally, men have very simple inner lives. Women, however, are very complex. If you ask a man, what are you thinking about? The answer is, not much. If you ask a man, what are you feeling? He has no idea. Men are very simple in the way that they respond to life. whereas women are very complex. But the wonderful thing is, as the French say, vive la différence. It's wonderful that there's a difference between the two because it makes the two of us so compatible. Let me bring this seminar to a close by simply pointing out this, is that your ability to communicate effectively with others, the people at home, your children, the members of your family, your coworkers, your customers, your bosses, your banks, your suppliers, the people you negotiate with, your ability to communicate effectively determines most of your success and happiness in life. Almost all of your big problems in life will be accompanied by breakdowns in communications. Almost all problems and financial losses in companies are as a result of poor communications. And the wonderful thing about communicating is that you can learn to be a better communicator by practicing. So, take courses on communicating and negotiating and business writing and communicating with power. Take courses on public speaking and public presentations. Make a decision that you're going to become one of the best, most confident, most competent, most capable communicators of your generation. And if you make the decision, then go out and make it come true. Now, I'd like to give you a free gift as a way of saying thank you for being a loyal supporter of mine and a determined continuous learner. So find out what I've been working on lately and receive your special at www.briantracy.com/learner. That's www.briantracy.com/learner. Just go there right now and see what I've got for you. Thanks again for listening. I look forward to talking to you and maybe even seeing you soon.